Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Creative Genius Podcast from Pearl Collective. Today, we welcome Patty Julber back to the podcast. Last time, Aaron spoke with Patty about being a coach for Pearl Collective, but in today's episode with Gail, Patty talks about selling her business. There are some great facts and stories in this episode, but if selling your business is something you're thinking about, this is going to be a must-listen for you.
Hi, Patty. It's so good to see you. So I am so excited to jump into our podcast today and talk a little bit about your journey to sell your business. But before we get into that, what I'd first like to do is ask you a little bit about how you got into interior design in the first place.
Well, it was in a very roundabout way. During the recession of 1989, yeah, that long ago, I had just moved from Puerto Rico back to California, and I was living in Sacramento. And my husband at the time did not have a job, and we needed money coming in. And JCPenney had an ad in the paper for custom decorators. They would do all the training and no experience necessary. And so I spent 3 weeks in a hotel room learning how to be a custom decorator. And that experience was amazing in that they taught me how to measure. They taught me so many different things. And they also taught sales. And that was, you know, something that no design school really talks about is sales. A biggest part of being a custom decorator is being a salesperson and being able to talk to people. And I loved it. And what I really found out is I loved sales. I loved being in people's homes. I liked making them more comfortable in their homes. I loved helping them see it with a different vision through different eyes. And so that's how I got into it. And then from there, I went off, moved several more times and ended up in Scottsdale in design school, and then started my own business several years after I moved to Bend. And owned it for 20 years.
Tell us about the business and what that ended up being at the end of the time that you owned it.
So the interesting thing about my business was I started out, because Bend was a growing little town, I started out taking anything that came along. And most of it was new construction with builders and their clients. One of the things that I learned several years into my business was any business that hires a subcontractor has to actually be a general contractor to be legal and hire a subcontractor to be able to schedule them. So I immediately got my contractor's license so that I would not get in trouble. And that helped me through the next recession in 08 and 09. And that really taught me so much about not just running a business, but the whole order of operation in both construction and in remodels, how to apply for permits, dealing with all of the different subs. And I just always said yes. I never said no. And that really helped me gain some very loyal customers during that period of business.
So you made it through 2008 to 2009, and did you see your business drop off during that time, or was it steady?
Actually, I ended up with some of my biggest years. I think 2007, and by August, I knew something was going wrong. My phone just stopped ringing, and told my husband that, and he wishes he would have listened to me, of course, but I ended up doing really, really well 2008, 2009. 2007 was brutal. I'm positive if I went back and looked at my numbers, I lost money. I didn't lose much, but my employees all got paid and, you know, I stayed in business. I kept plugging along and going forward.
It is so hard to go through that as a business owner, and you're bringing up something that isn't fairly common, that the business owner ends up not taking pay during those difficult times like that. And that you didn't give up, you just kept going.
You know that about me. I'm incredibly tenacious, resilient. I have a lot of grit. So I really do have that ability to sometimes put my head down and just hold on for dear life. I think about me as a six-year-old child learning how to water ski. And I held on until I just finally had to fall over to actually stop because I was just so tenacious. I wasn't going to let go. And I think that's carried through in my entire life.
Well, I think it's definitely one of the characteristics that makes you a successful business owner too.
Yes, I would agree.
So let's talk a little bit more about the business itself. You built it up over the course of time. You have been through your shares of ups and downs with it, of course. And you owned it for a period of how many years?
21.
21 years. Okay. So during that 21 years, you had some moments where you probably had some questions about, am I doing this right? Should I have done this differently? So what were some of those moments that you experienced?
Well, I definitely think that the first, that recession in 2007, 8, 9, definitely gave me pause for thought. I went to a business coach at the time that had been recommended to me by one of my employees who had a friend who'd gone to this person. And I got something from it, but I wouldn't say it got me moving in the right direction. It wasn't moving my needle forward in a big way, but it moved my needle forward. So it got me into studio designer. It organized me a little bit more. It introduced me to the concept of coaching. And then I also started with you, with Design Success University, then Gail Doby, Coaching and Consulting, and now Pearl Collective. And I was, again, introduced to the concept of coaching and what a business consultant could do to help you leapfrog from one area of business so that your knowledge base grew into other areas of your business.
And ironically, you have become our director of coaching. So it's kind of fun to watch this transition over time because we've known each other for a long time now.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it's fun to help watch you helping other people go through the process. And you just spoke with one of my clients who's considering the sale of her business. So we've got a lot of those people out here that are maybe thinking somewhere down the line, they want to exit their business. And the idea is to actually sell it and make some money, which you actually did, which is great.
Yes.
So what led you to wanting to sell your business?
Well, I found my enthusiasm was waning. I was getting annoyed and irritated with my clients and my employees. And it was just getting to a point where I dreaded going in. I dreaded going into my office. I just didn't really want to be a part of the day-to-day operations. It was just getting annoying. And so it was time to get out before I got really annoying.
So at what point before that 21 years was up, were you starting to think about getting out of the business?
Well, when I came to Pearl Collective, when I came to Gail Doby Coaching and Consulting and met with you, that was in 2018. I went through my VIP at that point. And I think I had mentioned to you, hey, I want to start thinking about selling the business. The following year, I listed it. So 2019, I listed it. And it was for sale for about a year. And I'd had one really cuckoo crazy person make an offer and then decided I had two, but neither of them were a good fit. So I pulled the listing, left it off for about a year, and then went back to Marty Fonke from Westbound Road, Marty Fonke and Becky Smith, his new partner. And he was a speaker at Genius Exchange in 2020, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so I listed with him shortly after that. And maybe in 2021. And so he really worked hard. He's a mergers and acquisitions broker, not necessarily just like a traditional business broker. Mm-hmm. And that took me through to the end. And he and Becky really were solidly by my side through this process.
That's great. Well, what did you do to prepare for the sale? And how long did it take to prepare for that process?
Well, I didn't know what I didn't know. I had a large S corp, and that covered multiple companies. My company was a DBA under that S corp, along with three or four other companies that we had, and all of them were lumped together within QuickBooks. Even though I used Studio for the front end of my business, I wasn't using it on the back end. And the biggest aha was that I needed to get my business out of QuickBooks and get everything into Studio so that it was clean and clear. I went through three bookkeepers during COVID. Unfortunately, my bookkeeper died, and then I had another bookkeeper who had too many clients, and then I had another bookkeeper who was incredibly rude to me and not very encouraging in how I should be moving my books. And so by the time I finally got to the end, I found Paul and Phil at Accounting Frontier, and they were incredibly kind and compassionate and finished up the job and cleaned up my books so that everything was clean and clear. I like most business owners, took advantage of what I could, meaning all my cars are owned by the company. Our travel was done with the company. Meals and cell phones and all of those sorts of things. We took advantage of what we could, but by doing that, we also, you have issues on the back end because there are questions about the revenue. There are questions about the net profit because of those things. So all of that got cleaned up. And from that, that really helped my business. The other thing that I think was good for my business was it was never in my name. One of the things that I learned from Marty Bunke was if your business is in your name, you are liable to get about 20% less than you would if it just had a random name.
Mm-hmm. So one of your messages from that is that do not run, especially the few years before you're ready to sell, you better take your personal expenses out of the business. Exactly. And have those as what's called a below the line expense. So it's below net profit, and you're showing what you're pulling out of the business, but paying through the business assets.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things to think about. And what other things was the buyer looking for, or what was he being advised to look for with his advisors?
To look for a pipeline, you want to make sure that you are continually marketing. Even when you're tired of the business, you cannot let it die on the vine. You have to be continually marketing so that you actually have a business to sell. Even with the economy taking a tank in 2023, I was continually marketing. I had big projects that were finishing up from 21 and 22, bleeding into 23, but I was still out there really making sure that I was talking to realtors, talking to builders, finding new business for the new buyer.
Okay. So continuing the marketing is essential, making sure you fill the pipeline. Makes sense completely. How about processes and procedures? Was he looking for that kind of documentation?
Yes, thank you. I was going to say that. And then making sure I had an operations manual, I had an employee manual, both of those were up to date, making sure that my processes were solid, my employees knew my processes, making sure that that he had some idea on every single aspect of the business. Mm-hmm. So that not only, if I got hit by a truck tomorrow, he would still be able to figure it out. He'd be able to find what he was looking for either by asking or by going through my Google Drive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that takes a lot of organization and planning ahead of time. And for most businesses, I would say that you need to at least be 3 years, if not 5 years, in the process of planning so that you are starting to set all of these things up and you're prepared for the process of this. And there's a lot of due diligence that happens as well.
Yes.
And through the process, especially at the end, I know you were having to deal with a lot of paperwork at the end. So what were some of the things that he was asking for right at the end?
Well, you know, he wasn't, but the SBA, he got an SBA loan. And I would say most, because it was an SBA loan, one of the things, it's that double-edged sword. The SBA goes through your finances with a fine-tooth comb. So that's, you know, in some ways that's really good. In other ways, that's difficult. They're continually coming back with one more question about why. So, you know, one of the things that happened to me was my inventory was not up to date. And so it lowered the price by about $15,000, which was no big deal, but I needed to be upfront and honest about that at the very end. It was 2 days before we were getting ready to sign everything. And I'd finally gotten an updated inventory. So updated books with my inventory on it. So explaining that and explaining why, mm-hmm. the why. That. But yes, the processes and procedure were crucial. The books were crucial. It's really finding that checklist of what is somebody else going to come in and see or not see that's there. Mm-hmm. Having your client journey laid out both internally and externally was crucial as well.
And having contracts, I would think, was part of it as well. So they could see what kind of contracts that you had in place to, and that you actually had proof that you had some sort of relationship with those clients.
Exactly. Both with clients and with vendors. And with the clients, I continually, monthly, had to show my work in progress. Hmm. What had closed, what's new, what's still happening, so that they could look at it and see the timeline.
Interesting.
Yeah, because, you know, he thought he was going to close much more quickly. He would have ended up with quite a bit more work in progress. It turned out, you know, I ended up collecting most of the work in progress. There were still 3 or 4 clients outstanding, but not the amount of money that he had thought at the beginning.
I see. So when you closed out of the business, did you take the cash out of the business?
Yes.
Okay. And was it an asset sale?
Yes.
Okay. And do you want to explain what that means, what an asset sale is?
So an asset sale, and almost everything is an asset, especially in the size of business that I had, is an asset sale. So an asset sale means I was selling a lot of blue sky. I was selling the goodwill around my name. I was selling my contract with my the owner of my building. I was selling all of the inventory, all of the FF&E, the furniture, fixtures and equipment in my building. He had contracts from all of my employees. I was able to cut off and assign all of the contracts from my business.
Mm. Interesting. And at what point did you tell your employees that you were selling?
Not till, you know, I had two of them confront me. I had one of my 1099 employees hear through the grapevine that I was selling. And she, instead of coming to me, went to one of my other employees and talked to her about it. And the reason I didn't tell them sooner was because I'd had 7 offers in 3.5 months. And of those 7 offers, none of them are six offers in 3.5 months. And then the 7th offer actually is the one that came to fruition. And I felt it was really important to not put my employees through that roller coaster that I was on. I didn't want them hearing, oh, it's for sale. Oh, you know, it's sold. Nope, it's sold. Nope. So I made a conscious decision to not tell them every time that was happening. Rightly or wrongly, I would have preferred to have sold it to an employee, because I do think an employee would have taken over and done a better job.
Okay. Well, and that's always difficult, because he was moving from another location as well. He wasn't living in your town.
No, he lived in my town. He worked, he worked for another. Yeah, that was one of the other ones.
Oh.
I had somebody from Denver, but that didn't happen. He actually did live in my town. He worked for a builder in my town, and but had, had never owned his own business. So.
Well, that's always interesting when they haven't owned their own business.
Yes. Yes.
In terms of selling, often we hear that you sell for a multiple of whatever your net profit is. And was that the way the offer came through for you?
It was a multiple. And I think if I remember correctly, it was 2.5 to 3. I can't remember, but I think it was 2.5.
Okay. Which is actually pretty good for a service-based business.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it was 2.5, and that changed at the last minute. So the first 6 people that made offers, it was for one price. By the time the 7th came around, I had my broker revalue it, because I'd finally closed out my books for 2022, and I'd done half again as much. So making sure that you revalue your business every time, at every point, every year, I guess is the best way to put it, if it's taking you multiple years to sell.
Sure. Okay. So when you did the valuation, what kind of company did you go to for that?
I used 3 different people. I went to a CPA who does valuations in my town. I went to a friend of mine who's a business broker. And then I went to the business broker that I ended up using the first time around.
Okay. And you just picked the highest one of that, or how did you?
No, I actually did kind of a median. 2 of them were very close, and one was probably 25% higher. So I kind of went in the middle there.
Okay. And that was what you used to establish the price of the business?
Correct.
Okay. So one of the goals, and my understanding is that when you're trying to sell your business, you want to have competition for to purchase the business, because that means that there is a very saleable asset. And do you think that was part of the value of having Marty help you with this?
I don't know about competition. Marty didn't understand what the business was to start with. It took him a while to understand. He kept thinking it was a mergers and acquisition type of business because he's an M&A guy. But when he finally understood, no, this is somebody that actually needs to be on site, sitting at a desk, running the business, then he got it. It probably could have been run from afar in a different way, but the people he was bringing to the table really didn't understand the marketing. They didn't understand it's a relationship-based business versus it's, a business that runs itself like a, car wash business.
Right.
So I think that understanding that helped him weed out people who weren't the right fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you do want to have competition for to buy it so that you're going to get a higher price. So do you feel like that happened or no for you?
No, not really. I mean, at one point I had two people who had put in offers at the same time. And I can't remember. I think one of them was slightly higher than the other one. But to me, it was more like I wanted the right person, not necessarily the right price, because I wanted to see the business succeed.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, you've spent a long time building a business, 21 years. You don't want to walk away and see it just fall apart.
Exactly.
Yeah. And in your particular case, the buyer, basically, you just turned over the keys to him, right? And you've not heard from him very much.
I have not. I've gone in to pick up mail and I'll see him and he's lovely, but he is like, got this. He's got to try it his way. And that makes, makes him happy. And that's
great.
Yeah.
You're happy.
Business. I'm really happy.
You got to walk away.
Really, really happy. I got to walk away without any encumbrance at all.
Okay. Well, except for you're taking back part of the loan, aren't you?
I did. I took back 5%, but it's not enough money that if the business didn't turn out, I wouldn't be devastated.
Yeah. Well, at least you got what you needed, and SBA did find that it was a good, solid business, and that worked out well for you.
Yes, exactly.
What were some of the other challenges that you faced during the process? Because I know that there were moments where there were ups and downs, and you were occasionally very emotional about it, which was quite normal, because you put all this effort into it. And then all of a sudden there was this, seemed like a flurry of requests of things that you needed to do or things you had to find out. So talk about that.
I should go back through my notes, but the very last day, actually the day before I was supposed to sign, they said, if you don't get all of these things done by today they didn't give me a timeline, by today, this won't close for another 6 weeks. That just sent my heart to my toes. I was so sad. And I got everything done and then found out, well, she was the person that had said that was on the East Coast and it was supposedly on her timeline, not on mine, being on the West Coast. So, I wasn't given a great checklist of, hey, this needs to get done and here's the due date. This needs to get done and here's the due date. So when I finally got all of these things done, turns out they were able to backdate it and we ended up closing the following week. It was the week before the 4th of July. So there were a few holiday dates in there. And so we were able to make it work, but it was sure touch and go there for a hot minute. I had some issues because my banker retired in the middle of it and he was supposed to be closing out my line of credit and I needed something called a UCC-3 and he just left and nobody had ever heard of it. So I had people jumping through hoops at my bank and I had a couple of other things that needed to get done and the mails. I sent it. I don't know how I sent it, but however I sent it, it never arrived. I never got the return receipt. Turned out it was the wrong thing anyway. And I finally called whatever the revenue office in Oregon. And she said, oh no, you need this. Here, I'm going to fax it to you, sign it, fax it back to me, and I'll have it done for you by, 12 o'clock today. So I had really nice people rooting for me and it was amazing. But the person who helped me at my bank I was in there 4 times a day and she just bent over backwards for me and got things done. And the person on the other line of the revenue office did the same. So I feel very, very lucky and very grateful that that happened.
Well, that brings up another good point, which is that you should have a relationship with your banker so that you have somebody who is willing to do that and has knowledge of your history of your business.
Yes. I absolutely agree. We know every single person. My husband used to be a banker. And so we know every single person at our bank personally and are kind to them and they're kind to us. And we've worked with them for 30 years now. And so it's so important to have that relationship so that you're able to go to somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Well, now you've been through the process, you've actually successfully closed. Yay. And what would you do differently?
I would pull my business separately from the other businesses, or I would have just at least, even if it wasn't separate, I would have at least kept its books much more separate. I would have, you know, you don't know what you don't know. So I would have asked for a checklist up front when I really felt like, okay, this one's going to a keeper. It's going to happen. I would have said, okay, I need a checklist with a timeline. So I would have asked for that. And the other person you need relationships with a couple of different people. And one is a good business attorney who's able to, even though Marty offered and gave me his contract, I'd already had my attorney start drafting one. And so that contract stuck because it was much more detailed. So I felt, even though, you know, that was great that Marty had that, I wanted to use my contract because, again, it was more detailed. It had a lot more details in it. And that's one of the things, you know, you need to know what you want coming in. Are you going to act as a consultant? Will you'll probably have to have an NDA and a non-compete. And the non-compete, is it within 25 miles? Is it within 100 miles? Where it's usually geographic. You don't want it to be the whole state if you're ever going to practice again. You want to be able to figure out if you're going to have access to your vendors. Are you going to be able to buy things at cost for a certain amount of time? What does all of that look like for you? I had one potential client that could have been a $10 million client, and I needed to put that in that I would be the consultant on that job if it ever happened. So I did put that in there. And the other thing about having a good attorney is they're going to make sure that you're not tripping yourself up. And they're going to make sure also that you're getting, you want it to be, I'm sorry, I don't remember exactly, but there's a point where you want one thing to be more than the other because you're going to pay more taxes on one than the other during the asset sale, whether it's goodwill or actual, I can't remember what that is, but whatever it was like, you know, you want it to be 80% and the other person wants it to be 20%. And we actually agreed and got it to what I wanted it to be. So, that's a discussion with your CPA. And so that's the next person you want to have in your back pocket is your CPA, understanding your finances, understanding the repercussions. If you're doing any financing, if you're financing your business, what does that look like? And having the ability to look at the tax repercussions of selling your business. What does that look like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that is definitely something to think about. So when you sold your business, that became more like regular income for you when you sold it?
Yeah, And so, you know, it's taxed pretty high. I think it's taxed at 35, 36%, something like that. Yeah.
Very expensive. Okay.
Yeah, it is.
Are there any other suggestions that you would make for somebody who's thinking about selling their business in the process of that preparation or throughout? What are some mindset issues that you could help them with? Because this is emotional. It's a big deal to sell your business.
It is emotional. This is your baby. You have birthed this. You've watched it, you know, go through those teenage years. You've watched it be a toddler, all of the things. And then you're like, okay, it's time for you to go. You need to move out now, go to college. Have somebody else take care of you. So when you are really listen to yourself, when you no longer have the enthusiasm for the business, when you just don't feel like you want to be there anymore, it's time to start thinking about how to get your plan in place and really have the business valued. So you have a good idea of what the worth is as on a baseline basis. Mm-hmm. And then if you assume you want to sell the business at one point, always be ready. Just keep marketing your pipeline so it'll be full for the new owner. One of the things I think, here's the biggie. If you can sell your business is over $1 million in revenue, only one in 3.5 sell, or about 30%. Businesses under $1 million, the percentage drops to about 20%, or one in 5.5. So, and then look at if your name is on the business, you know, maybe use your initials rather than your name, because it will sell for almost 20% less if your name is on the business.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a big consideration in all the things that you mentioned. And then I guess the other piece too, you didn't tell your employees until right toward the end, but yes, just retaining employees, that would that have created a problem if you hadn't retained your employees?
I'm sure it would have. And that was another piece of my thinking was, is I can't have people quit. That he's expecting to have these six employees. And if three of them quit, you know, on the one hand, it would have been better for him payroll wise, because he turned around and fired three of them pretty quickly. So, yeah, it definitely is. It's challenging. If you're not selling to an employee, you really have to think it through on if you want your employees to know your whole process. I'm pretty much an open book, but I really didn't feel, again, that it was, I didn't feel it was the right thing to do to let them know at that point.
Okay. Well, very interesting. Well, thank you for sharing all this. I know this will help a lot of people who are thinking about it. Why don't we end with three takeaways that you feel would be the most important for people to remember from this episode?
Well, I guess, again, pay attention to how you're feeling when you're going into the business. Do you have that enthusiasm? Do you still love your clients? I loved my clients. I just didn't like the whole process. I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to project manage their projects. I wanted to do the design and then be there at the installation and say, ta-da. But I recognized that I needed to be doing everything still. So it was better for me to get out of it at that point. Just always be ready. Always understand that your books need to be clean. Your processes need to be in place. Creating a solid team so that anybody who takes over is going to feel confident in taking over. They're going to have the knowledge, the institutional knowledge that you have. Get as much of it down on paper or in video as you can so that people understand what was going on in your brain. And just what's a third one? Have a plan for afterwards. You know, I was so caught up in the sale that it's taken about 7 months for me to really, and I was so grateful that I'm coaching and that I had the director of coaching, because it gave me a purpose to get up. It gave me a purpose for moving forward in life. But it took me about 7 months to kind of come down off of that adrenaline and the cortisol of being amped up daily. So have a plan, figure out, you know, that doesn't mean you have to have it in writing or in stone, but maybe have a little bit of a plan of what you want to do post business.
Well, it's interesting because my best friend also works for our company. And she said to me the other day, that she was grateful because it gave her that transition time between her ending her other job and going into retirement so that she could transition into something. So essentially that's what you're doing with us by being director of coaching. It's been a great plus for us to have you on the team.
I love it. It's, to me, it fills my cup. It fills my cup the way design used to fill my cup. And this now fills my cup because I feel like I have these 30 years of design knowledge, design business knowledge, and it's wonderful to be able to share that and to help people leapfrog in the, into their business and really grow them, help them push their needle forward.
So great. Well, thank you, Patty, for sharing all these great insights. And I'm sure there will be many questions about this in the future, but thank you for helping us with the podcast today.
You are welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Whether you plan on selling your business soon or you just listened for future reference, we hope you gained some valuable knowledge from this episode of the Creative Genius Podcast. If you want to learn more about the business coaching services we offer, go to thepearlcollective.com. For more episodes of this podcast, you can subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, our YouTube channel, Pearl Collective, or by checking the podcast page on our website.